The story begins in the province of Beijing, in Xiang, where a man is lying in the middle of an altar. The people around him ask if he really wants to continue with the ritual, and Emperor Qushu commands them to proceed immediately. This man is known as Eunuchal Li Qiusu, the person behind all the power of the Empress of the Ming Empire, a secretive figure who monopolizes the territory and authority of the land. He is also known as the worst villain in history for manipulating the empire's politics for his own benefit, and he is, in fact, our protagonist. Through great effort, he managed to transform the insignificant Third Empress into the reigning Empress. However, despite all his successes, there is something he cannot achieve. Looking at a book of combat positions in his room, he remarks how unbelievable it is. Since he is a eunuch, it is obvious that he cannot partake in this kind of combat. Suddenly, someone bursts into the room, calling him an idiot and shouting for the old man. It is the Third Empress Yuan Hua, who demands to know why he wants to leave this world. She kneels and begs him to stop this mysterious ritual, asking if the union of yin and yang is really so important to him. She wants to know why he can't just be happy with her by his side. She says that if it's money or power he needs, she will give him everything he wants as long as he stops the ritual. But Qiusu responds that he has already made his decision. He asks for her forgiveness for his betrayal, but says he cannot serve her until the end. Naturally, the question arises. Why is our protagonist so obsessed with the union of yin and yang? Most people wouldn't understand, but for him, it is crucial. This is because he is a reincarnated soul, and in his past life, he was also a virgin. Even now, he remains a virgin, having lived more than 50 years without experiencing anything. The infamous reincarnation truck struck him while he was crossing the street, and he ended up in this martial world for 50 years. He died at 28 and reincarnated as a 12-year-old boy. The problem was that as soon as he arrived, he was kidnapped by a maniac. This was no ordinary kidnapper. The lunatic castrated all the men to sell them as eunuchs on the black market. Despite all this, Qiusu did everything possible to restore his masculinity. He transformed the princess into an empress just to meet an extremely renowned doctor. He mastered martial arts to the point of rebirth and became the most powerful martial artist in the palace. But even when one of the men knelt before him and declared that creating something out of nothing was impossible, he understood his intentions. The man apologized, explaining that only if he were reborn once more could he recover what he had lost. This made Qiusu question the purpose of money, power, and martial prowess if he remained a eunuch. These events led him to decide to reincarnate into a new body. He wants to experience a life full of combat and action behind closed doors. Essentially, he's a close combat prodigy, and if he can't enjoy life with the most extraordinary fighters, he won't be satisfied. He orders them to remove the Empress, who leaves crying, questioning how he could do this and not wanting to see him die in such an insignificant way. She calls him father because he raised her from childhood. Naturally, having known her since she was so young, he only sees her as a child or a younger sister. The moment she starts crying, he almost changes his mind. However, the decision has already been made, and to him, she is family who will have to cope with his loss. A man wearing a turban approaches and warns that the reincarnation technique is an extremely forbidden ritual. Out of every 100 people who attempt it, 99 die, and he asks if Qiusu really wants to risk it. Qiusu looks down and thinks that if he must live this way, it's better to die. He then orders the ritual to proceed. In life, he has conquered and enjoyed all that strength can bring. He has also spent all the wealth he could. All he wants now is to be reborn, and for that, he is willing to risk everything. As his entire body glows with a pink light, he sees a blurry old man calling to him. Slowly, he opens his eyes and rises, wondering where he is. The old man simply says he's glad the boy seems fine. However, Qiusu immediately recognizes who this bastard is. This is the same cursed old man who castrated him 50 years ago in the Imperial Palace. Qiusu remembers that, in the past, he had tried to hunt this man down only to discover he had been killed by some bandits. However, it seems that instead of reincarnation, what happened was a regression in time. He thought he would gain a new body by reincarnating, but as soon as he looks down his pants to check, the old man, confused, asks if he's hurt. Qiusu grins psychotically at him and thanks the old man for saving him before apologizing. The old man helps him up and mentions he has some herbs at home that would help the boy recover. But Qiusu laughs, breaks the man's finger, and asks if he plans to kidnap him again to sell him as a eunuch. When the old man asks how he knows about this, Qiusu twists the man's arm. Despite just regressing in time, he still remembers the martial arts of his previous life, and for someone who stood at the top of the Imperial Palace, defeating an old man is effortless. He puts the old man in a chokehold, saying that in his previous life he was saddened to learn the old man had already been killed. But this time, it would be Qiusu who would end him. After squeezing the life out of him, the man's body drops to the ground. Qiusu spits on the corpse and reflects that it has been a long journey, but he finally reached this point. In his past life, even with all the power and wealth he amassed, he couldn't enjoy any of it. Now, however, he is a completely different person. Whether reincarnation or regression, from now on, he will live for the pleasures of life, if you catch my drift. And so begins the story of the second eunuch who reclaimed his masculinity. 2 months pass after his revenge against the cursed old man. Kiwasu walks across a bridge, freezing in the cold. At this moment, he is trying to reach the province of Gamsuk, suffering along the way. But he tells himself that this pain is nothing compared to the life of pleasure he dreams of living. Although he has never experienced it, he knows it's more than just physical contact. If it were only that, he could simply earn money and buy some private combat sessions. However, he refuses to settle for such low-quality experiences. What he wants is to share true love with wonderful women, a connection of emotions and mental intentions. He dreams of the kind of love that leaves both people completely satisfied. Drooling at the thought, he declares this is the perfect thing to pursue. Still, he knows that to achieve this level of intimacy, he will need food and money. This is why he has decided to start his path toward becoming a hero in the martial world. Thinking he would reincarnate into the future, he had buried many treasures in his grave. Unfortunately, this isn't the case, but he still has the advantage of knowing what will happen 50 years into the future. With his martial prowess, he is confident that becoming a respected hero won't be too difficult. First, however, he needs to correct his habit of laughing like an idiot from his eunuch days. And so he swears this is where the legendary story of the harem king Lee Chil-su begins. He signals toward a building and asks if anyone is inside. From within, someone hears the voice of a child and steps out, wondering how anyone could climb the mountain in such a blizzard. Chil-su takes a deep breath and shouts for all to hear that he has lost his family to bandits and needs help to grow stronger. He declares that he wants to become a disciple of the Joint Clan. This martial faction combines three philosophies, Confucianism, Buddhism, and Taoism, to combat the dark forces of Django. However, to outsiders, they are often seen as either a demonic sect or a group of bandits. The old man rushes toward Chil-su and scolds him for risking his life by climbing the mountain in winter. Chil-su simply replies that nothing else matters if he can join the Joint Clan. The old man stops and tells him to show his arms and hands. He touches the boy's wrists and notices that the natural energy in Chil-su's body is already expelling impurities. Somehow, the boy knows the technique required to ascend the mountain. The old man praises him, saying that if he managed to get there, it proves he has some talent. He asks if Chil-su knows the basics of martial arts or if his family taught him anything. Chil-su claims that yes, that's exactly the case. Of course, he's not about to reveal his 50 years of experience. The old man introduces himself as Zhang Yang, leader of the Gangdong sect, and explains that there are several processes to join. However, based on Chil-su's basic talent, he will approve him. Chil-su celebrates as everything is going according to plan. He came to this place precisely because he knows Gangdong is on the brink of collapse, so they won't refuse a new disciple. Chil-su starts walking around doing pelvic exercises to prepare for future action. As he explores, however, he notices that the place is in far worse condition than he remembers. There isn't a single intact building, which is shocking given that he knows this sect will rise to become one of the top 5 in the world within 50 years. Seeing the scale of destruction now makes him doubt that a little. Zhang Yang tells him he must meet someone, the master of the sect's disciples. Chil-su thinks that the more chaotic Gangdong is now, the better for him. This way, he can become the prominent swordsman who saves a fallen sect, creating a legendary tale. They stop in front of a temple, and Zhang Yang calls for someone named Ruya, announcing the arrival of a new disciple, Li Chil-su. Chil-su shields himself from the harsh blizzard. Suddenly, someone rushes out of the building. Chil-su is startled as the person welcomes him as the new disciple. Chil-su wonders why this person is so ridiculously handsome. It's not a master as he assumed. It's a boy around his age. He recalls from the manuscripts that this person was supposed to be incredibly ugly, but in person, he's shockingly good-looking. If this continued, his future was at risk. Ruya asks if he's okay, and Chil-su responds that there's nothing wrong with him. He then extends his hand and tells Ruya to stop being so formal, since they are brothers from now on. Chil-su is annoyed that this bastard is still so nice, secretly wishing the guy only had 3 centimeters at most. Ruya tells him to hurry up because there are many places he wants to show him. Before Chil-su can say anything, Ruya pulls him away, but strangely, Chil-su doesn't want to be touched by him. He pulls his hand back and tells Ruya not to touch him like that. Ruya, or is it Kyuya? Chil-su still isn't sure if this is a man or a woman, and he's a bit confused, apologizes, saying it's their first time having a disciple and they got a bit too excited. Chil-su also apologizes, admitting he overreacted while thinking that he can't afford to lose the opportunity to stay in this sect for now. Meanwhile, Ruya is just observing him. The snowstorm continues to fall, and the old man reflects that winter in this place is finally ending. He hopes Chil-su gets along with Ruya. 10 years ago, he accepted this child, who was an orphan at the time. After discovering how talented Ruya was, he nurtured them up to this day. Now it's clear if Ruya is actually a boy, or perhaps not. It turns out Ruya is a woman disguised as a man in the martial world. All the old man hopes is that her disguise isn't revealed to Chil-su. Later that night, lying in bed, Chil-su reflects that tomorrow marks the start of his phenomenal journey in this sect. However, up until now, he has been mistreated the entire time, all thanks to that bastard Jin Hui. Earlier in the day, Jin Hui introduced herself, apologizing for the sect's dilapidated state, but expressing a desire to show him the significance of the place. Even after the massacre 50 years ago, the palace of Ryongshan, where the master still resided, proved that the joint sect wasn't dead. She wanted to share its history with him. Hibble-Su told her he understood but asked her not to get too close because he's a bit shy. She agreed while he wondered why his new friend seemed so downcast. He approached her and said mistakes happen, so there's no need to feel disheartened. He even encouraged her to tell him the story of the sect if she wanted to. Jin Hui smiled brightly and Chul-Su felt he had done the right thing. It was easy for him to calm down a kid like this by simply saying what they wanted to hear. What he couldn't understand was why this boy kept clinging to him. Back in his room, Kyubelsu writes on the wall, venting that he doesn't want to keep getting hugged by that boy. He's endured 50 years of celibacy and can't bear to see men anymore, especially one who's considered a genius among geniuses, the type who could rebuild an entire sect without breaking a sweat. In his past life, rumors said this person rejected every woman who approached him because he preferred to focus on martial power. Now, however, Kyubelsu is certain Jin Hui is gay. What he doesn't realize is that Jin Hui is actually a woman. He recalls seeing Jin Hui in the castle in his past life, thinking he was enjoying himself in some peculiar way. Little did he know, Jin Hui was struggling with her disguise. Determined, Kyul-Soo swears that in this life, he will ensure he gets to use what he's always wanted. Strangely, however, the weapon he always dreamed of wielding feels a little down today. He decides it's time to do some exercises to stay in shape. Meanwhile, Jin Hui, in her own room, is deep in thought. She wonders why she behaved so rudely toward the new disciple today. She couldn't control her excitement about welcoming someone new to her family. She recalls the moment Kyul-Soo told her he would gladly listen to the sect's story. The memory heals her as she realizes he cared about her feelings even if he seemed indifferent. She's eager to get closer to him and wonders if this is what it feels like to have a younger brother. At the very least, she hopes to get close enough to share a hug without it being awkward. The next morning, Kyul-Soo finishes washing a pot. He places it down and notices how decrepit the kitchen is. It looks like it could collapse at any moment. Even though it feels strange to spend his time doing this, he knows he needs to build his reputation here. Making a good impression on the master and the senior disciple is the best way to do that. Of course, while cleaning and gathering vegetables, he doesn't miss the chance to practice his unique exercises. Suddenly, Jin Hui appears and asks what he's doing in the kitchen. Caught off guard, he nervously explains that he prepared breakfast on his own. She praises him, impressed by his efficiency, and smiles, while Chul-Soo wonders why this bastard is so annoyingly beautiful. He responds that losing his family forced him to mature quickly. Jin Hui, visibly moved, reveals that she's also an orphan and admires his maturity. Kyul-Soo finds it strange that this person keeps apologizing and saying they understand him. Jin Hui offers to help him prepare the vegetables. Kyul-Soo remembers that in the future, this person will have someone by their side who will be renowned as the most beautiful and powerful in the world. Although that's far off, he decides it's best to maintain a good relationship with Jin Hui. He thanks her for her help and heads off to wash some vegetables, all the while thinking that he must keep his distance. He is determined to become an extremely powerful martial artist and conquer all the women who will be dazzled by his achievements. Suddenly, the shelf holding the pot collapses. Jin Hui turns to Chul-Soo and warns him to be careful as the debris is falling toward his head. He instinctively shields his face, but when he looks up, Jin Hui is standing too close, asking if he's okay. Kyul-Soo, flustered, replies that he's fine while wondering what kind of situation he has gotten himself into. Jin Hui casually remarks that he's lighter than he looks, leaving Chul-Soo blushing as he catches a faint scent of wildflowers. Trying to shake off the moment, he snaps back to reality and, feeling a hand on his back and wrist, yells out, asking where his senior brother thinks he's touching. Jin Hui hastily explains that it wasn't intentional and pleads with him not to misunderstand. Kyul-Soo, embarrassed, tells Jin Hui to stop blushing because it's making the situation even weirder. Jin Hui apologizes again, says she'll leave, and tells him to rest, assuming he must be shaken. As she walks away, Kyul-Soo sees this, thinking this cursed senior might just be trying to kill him indirectly. After all, if Master Zhang Yang saw this scene, he'd likely grab him by the neck and toss him out. He firmly tells Jin Hui not to help with chores anymore, declaring that as the junior, he will handle it himself. Jin Hui, visibly uncomfortable, reluctantly agrees but seems a bit disheartened. A moment later, she picks up a small pot and asks if it's okay for her to give just a little help. Kyul-Soo sighs and gives in for now, saying it's fine. 2 months pass, and Master Zhang Yang gathers the disciples to ask what they think true martial strength is. Some believe strength comes from external sources, requiring the consumption of various elixirs. Others argue that it's internal, achieved through constant body training. Zhang Yang states that true strength lies in the balance of both external and internal energies. Only a martial artist who connects with both the world and their body can reach their full potential. Jin Hui, focused on training, acknowledges the lesson and walks off, telling Chul-Soo to train hard as well. Chul-Soo smiles mischievously, thinking that even if no one ordered him to, he'd still give it his all. After all, a superior body equals superior vitality for the ultimate combat. As someone who plans to enjoy countless battles, achieving maximum potential is a must. To him, this suffering is nothing but sweet preparation. Sweet drips to the ground, but he feels at peace, knowing his efforts over the past 2 months are finally paying off. It feels like the euphoria gym enthusiasts experience when lifting heavier weights. In his past life, Kyul Soo hated his body. No matter how much he trained, he always maintained a somewhat cute appearance. This was because he had mastered a technique specifically designed for eunuchs. Before discovering that this technique would permanently halt his body's development, he had even destroyed nations searching for elixirs. The more he reflects on this past, the angrier he becomes. In this life, he vows to ensure everything will be different. He will have a masculine body. Suddenly, Jin Huai approaches. Kyul Soo asks why she's there, and she replies that she's finished for training and came to fetch him. Apparently, time flew by, and Kyul Soo didn't even realize training was over. Frustrated that the days seemed too short, he reluctantly follows her while she observes him silently. That night, high on the mountain, Kyul Soo realizes he's missing something essential for achieving his perfect body. This leads him to train cardiovascular endurance, which he deems crucial for navigating the Garden of Pleasures. However, the sect leader doesn't allow excessive training, fearing it could harm his young body. But Kyul Soo refuses to give up his nightly runs, believing they are key to becoming the King of Vitality. Unbeknownst to him, Jin Huai is watching from afar. When he notices her, he stumbles on a rock and goes tumbling down. Angry and embarrassed, he demands to know why she's there. Jin Huai asks why he snuck away from the pavilion to train alone, reminding him that overexertion is dangerous. Kyul Soo fumes, annoyed that he failed to sense her energy due to his current weakness. He worries she might report this to the master, jeopardizing his secret training. At the same time, he can't abandon his runs, they're essential to his goal. In an emotional performance, he apologizes to Jin Hui, saying he needs the training because he's weak, untalented, and forgets everything he learns. Tearing up, he claims he hates falling behind and that if he doesn't push himself, he'll never be able to stand alongside his friend. Jin Hui, visibly shaken, listens as Kyul Soo continues his act, crying and pleading not to be expelled. Moved, Jin Hui hugs him tightly, apologizing for not realizing how much he was suffering. But this was the last thing Kyul Soo wanted. As he tries to wriggle free, Jin Hui holds him firmly, telling him not to cry. Kyul Soo is mortified, thinking about how his first hug ended up being with a man. He had hoped to save this milestone for a breathtaking beauty, yet here he is, trapped in Jin Hui's iron grip. While Jin Hui glows in bliss, Kyul Soo notices something oddly soft pressing against his head. The scene shifts to a memory of a young girl standing among a pile of dead animals as people call her a monster. Angrily, she glares back at them. Zhang Yun appears, offering her two rice cakes, and tells her that, like him, she's a human under the same sky. He kneels and asks if she would follow him. Back in the present, Jin Huai tells Kyul Soo that the master wouldn't expel him just for lacking martial arts talent. Now that he's part of the sect, he's family and will always be their junior. Kyul Soo pulls away from the hug, surprised to feel for the first time a hint of sympathy for Jin Huai. Despite his immense talent and mastery of martial arts, Jin Hui has the condition of gynecomastia, that faintly noticeable chest some men have. And so Kyul Soo believes that what he felt against his head earlier must have been Jin Hui's chest, specifically the result of his gynecomastia. Feeling pity for the poor guy, Kyul Soo convinces himself there's no doubt Jin Huai is a man, as this was already confirmed back at the palace. Time passes, how much, he's not sure, but the sect leader announces that they've completed their external body training. Kyul Soo's monsters, muscles, are well developed, and it's now time to begin internal arts training. Jin Hui congratulates him enthusiastically, which embarrasses Kyul Soo. He's fed up with how much Jin Hui keeps involving herself in everything he does. The leader notices Kyul Soo's discomfort and asks if something is wrong. Kyul Soo brushes it off, saying it's nothing, while thinking that he has bigger problems than this person right now. Thanking the leader, he requests not to reduce his external training regimen. The master seems displeased by this, and Kyul Soo knows he's right. Typically, beginners only need to train their external bodies to maintain basic physical condition, with the rest of their time dedicated to learning internal techniques or weapons training. But Kyul Soo has a different goal, to build the perfect body that will captivate women. After all, he has to compete with Jin Huai, who's much more attractive than him. The leader asks why he's so adamant about continuing external training. Kyul Soo explains that despite appearing talented, he actually develops slowly. He wants to contribute more than anyone else to rebuilding the sect and believes that additional effort will help achieve that. He acknowledges that continuing such training isn't the most efficient path, but it's not impossible. Moreover, if two fighters use the same sword strike, the one with greater strength will win. This slight advantage, he believes, will not only secure his victories, but also help him eventually attract an extraordinary woman who will fall for his strength. Smiling, he pleads with the master to allow it, confident that he can push himself to the limit. The leader is impressed by the determination in Kyul Soo's eyes. Here is someone who recognizes his ordinary talent yet strives to exceed it through sheer effort. Reflecting on the essence of the sect, to help individuals reach their maximum potential, the leader considers that certain traditions were abandoned as the sect deteriorated. Perhaps Kyul Soo's resolve is precisely what's needed to restore what was lost. Handing him a scroll, the leader says it contains the foundational formula for the Yang Symbiote martial art. Hyul-soo, confused, asks if this means he has permission to continue external training. The leader explains that the martial world is cruel to those without talent, but for those willing to face challenges, all paths open. Thus, Hyul-soo is permitted to continue his external training but must also master the internal technique detailed in the scroll. Grinning, Hyul-soo thanks him. The leader then begins infusing energy into Hyul-soo's body, instructing him to guide it along the paths described in the scroll. As the warm, gentle energy flows through him, Hyul-soo realizes it's completely different from the cold, sharp energy of the eunuch techniques he mastered in his past life. This is Yang Kai, vital and rejuvenating. The leader, Zhang Yang, praises him for reaching the realm of internal energy. Hyul-soo pats his chest proudly, knowing he's no longer a eunuch. From this moment on, he truly feels reborn as a master. Jin Hui smiles joyfully, witnessing his progress. Later that night, Jin Hui tells the leader she wants to train externally alongside Hyul-soo. She explains that, as a senior, she wants to lead by example, just as their leader does. The master, impressed by her sense of camaraderie, permits it, saying that even in the worst-case scenario, it will be a valuable learning experience. Looking out the window, the master feels hopeful, seeing these two young disciples earnestly working to rebuild the sect. Perhaps he thinks the long-held dreams of the previous master might finally come true. The next day, Hyul-soo practices his punches, his face flushed as he begins to sense the new Yang energy. Still, something about it feels strange and unfamiliar, likely because he had grown accustomed to the eunuch techniques in his past life. Reflecting on this, he recalls the sect emblem the leader showed him, the reversed Taiji symbol. This emblem represents the ancestral techniques of mastering the inverse yin-yang. Hyul-soo resolves to adapt fully to this new energy, believing it is key to achieving both his physical and martial ideals. Mastering the technique of inverse yin-yang allows one to harbor two opposing energies within their body, achieving the peak of life force. This is why other sects often labeled them as practitioners of demonic arts. Using two such forces was unnatural. However, unlike demonic sects, they use their martial arts to eliminate demonic threats. Hyul-soo reminds himself to stay mindful of this distinction and not be deceived by rumors. He is overjoyed to have joined this sect. Eliminating demonic martial sects would surely earn him respect worldwide. Suddenly, a knock comes at the door. A small boy stands there, pleading for help for his grandfather. Tears stream down his face as he implores them, saying if this truly were the most righteous sect in Gansu, they'd surely have someone who could help the man who supported them his whole life. Jin Hui asks what's going on, and Hyul-soo explains that someone's asking for help. The problem is, their master isn't around today, leaving them uncertain about what to do. Shortly after, they step outside, and the boy explains he needs help finding whoever stole all of his grandfather's goats. Hyul-soo remarks that such a theft should be reported to the local authorities. The boy insists it wasn't a person who did it. Judging by the tracks and destruction, it must have been something else. He explains that his grandfather always loved this sect and was raising the goats to sell and donate the proceeds. But when he went to fetch them from market, they were gone. Apologizing for being unable to pay, the boy begs them to help his grandfather, who supported the sect his whole life. Hyul-soo, after some thought, agrees to check it out, reasoning that the boy's effort to come all the way up the mountain deserves at least a look. Later, the boy leads them to the scene, and Hyul-soo, noting the location at the base of Gandong Mountain, suspects it might have been a wild animal. His attention is drawn to some marks on the ground that look like snake tracks. However, the size suggests it's a demonic creature. He asked Jin Hui if there's any legend about a giant snake on Gandong Mountain. She says she's never heard of such a thing. If it existed, the master would have dealt with it. Hyul-soo knows that the energy accumulating in the Gandong Mountains could trigger mutations in animals, but something this large would have been noticed before, meaning it appeared recently. He also sees this as the perfect chance to absorb a lot of vital energy. Hyul-soo tells Jin Hui he'll handle it. Jin Hui hesitates, saying it's dangerous to act without informing the master. Hyul-soo brushes this off, claiming that causing unnecessary alarm would be unwise and helping the mountain's residents is a virtuous act. Ignoring the boy's plea could fuel the rumors that their sect is demonic. Jin Hui admits this makes sense, and the boy smiles, hopeful they'll eliminate the creature. Hyul-soo instructs Jin Hui to escort the child back home while they follow the snake's trail. Later, as they run through the mountains, Hyul-soo finds the continuation of the trail. Jumping from branch to branch, Jin Hui again questions whether acting without the master's knowledge is wise. Hyul-soo assures her that helping villagers is harmless, though his real motive is to accumulate vital energy. They pause on a branch as he advises caution, but suddenly, the trail vanishes. Jin Hui warns him to be careful, and when he looks up, the massive snake lunges at him. It strikes him square in the chest, sending him crashing to the ground. Jin Hui screams as Hyul-soo struggles to rise, bloodied and bruised. The narration interjects with a prophecy about a saint from another sect who got lost in Gandong Mountain and discovered a legendary item, secret techniques abandoned by Gandong's ancestors and an elixir. For an ordinary beast to become a demonic creature, it must absorb immense spiritual energy. The mutation likely occurred because residual energy in a cultivation spot affected the snake. Gripping his wounds, Chiu Su realizes that if he survives, he'll not only restore his vitality, but also grow stronger and recover Gondong's lost techniques. Jin Huai rushes to his side, screaming for her junior as the snake prepares to strike again. She attacks, but her sword is ineffective against its tough scales. As she notices something on the side, the snake's tail slams her, sending her flying. Chiu Su mentally berates her inexperience, thinking she panicked in a critical moment. Grabbing a branch, he lunges at the snake, stabbing it in the eye and forcing it to retreat momentarily. However, the venom begins to take its toll and Chiu Su feels weaker. Jin Hui asks if he's okay, but he insists they must focus. They've fallen into the creature's trap. He asks if she noticed the hardness of its scales, and Jin Hui admits they're impenetrable. It must decapitate the snake in a single attack, but it's too fast to allow that. Chiu Su notes that Jin Hui still has far to go before reaching her full strength. The real problem is that, though he retains his past life skills, he's already been poisoned and can only buy them a little time. If Jin Hui, with her inexperience, also gets poisoned, they're doomed. He resolves to create an opening. Removing his belt, he tells her to prepare for his signal. When it comes, she must use all her destructive yang energy in one decisive attack. Jin Hui hesitantly asks how he plans to do anything in his condition. Chiu Su charges toward the snake, yelling that there's no time for hesitation. No matter how formidable a demon may be, they all have a weakness. He shouts as he dodges the snake's strike. Using his belt, he loops it around the snake's neck and slides underneath it. He signals Jin Hui, who leaps with her sword, delivering a precise slash that cleaves the creature in two. The snake's body crashes to the ground, and Jin Hui remarks that, as expected, the neck was its weak point. Still, she's shocked that Chiu Su seemed to know this and guided her to decapitate the snake. Her attention shifts to the side, where Chiu Su collapses to the ground. His body is burning from within, the venom's effects as described in legends. Jin Hui grabs him as he struggles, thinking it's not so bad. He plans to use his superior energy control to absorb and expel part of the venom. Looking at Jin Hui, he feels confident he'll be fine soon. But Jin Hui, panicking, shakes him and pleads for him to wake up. Blaming her own weakness for relying on him to create an opening, she hugs him, vowing to save him somehow. Placing him on the ground, she declares that she's not ready to lose him like this. Without hesitation, she leans down and uses her mouth to suck the venom from his neck. Chiu Su jolts awake, confused and disoriented, feeling something soft against his neck. Realizing what's happening, he flails and yells, asking what Jin Hui is doing. Jin Hui sits up, spitting out the venom, equally flustered. Chiu Su fumes, calling her reckless while she blushes, insisting it's fine. She'll make sure he's safe. Later by the fire, Chiu Su sits despondently. Jin Hui, cheerful, comments that his pulse has stabilized, though she finds it odd that he suggested eating the demonic snake's meat. Chiu Su explains that some snake species have incredibly nutritious meat, to which Jin Hui muses that the master might enjoy it too. Annoyed, Chiu Su can't believe she's thinking about their master in a moment like this. He says that once they've eaten, they should search the snake's cave. After wandering through the forest, they finally find the entrance at the mountain's summit. Jin Hui remarks on the strong spiritual energy emanating from the cave. Chiu Su is impressed by her sharp intuition, wondering if she used the same skill in her past life to find this place. Inside, Jin Hui marvels, saying she never imagined Gongdong had a place like this. She speculates that the energy might be tied to some lost manuscript. Chiu Su agrees it's possible. It could be a hidden cultivation spot of the ancestors or where a master achieved immortality. If so, the place should be brimming with elixirs. Jin Hui notices something in the corner, several pills. However, they seem devoid of energy, likely consumed by the snake. Deeper inside, they discover a temple. In front of it sits a table with several books. Jin Hui approaches and identifies them as sword techniques. Realizing the significance, they conclude these are the lost martial arts of Gongdong. Jin Hui is in awe, convinced this must have been where the ancient masters trained. Chiu Su, having anticipated this, remains calm. She exclaims they stumbled upon an incredible opportunity. Chiu Su notes there might be more hidden treasures and suggests they split up to search. As soon as he's out of sight, Chiu Su sprints deeper into the cave, determined to find the elixirs before Jin Hui. If he can secure them, he'll accelerate his progress and avoid living in her shadow. Eventually, he spots a floating pill. Drooling at the sight, he declares this will help him leave behind all past humiliations, bringing him one step closer to become the harem king. But before he can grab it, Jin Hui shouts from another direction, having found a bathing spring. She notices something peculiar, but is interrupted by Chiu Su's screams. She rushes to him and finds him collapsed in front of a frozen area. Jin Hui recognizes it immediately. It's Medicine Su, the legendary elixir of life. Formed over millennia, it contains immense yin energy, the feminine counterpart to yang vitality. However, this is disastrous for Chiu Su, whose goal revolves around building yang energy. Consuming it would completely disrupt his balance, leading to the same feminine characteristics he despised in his past life as a eunuch. Chiu Su, devastated, realizes this could undo all his efforts. Jin Hui asks why he's crying so much, and he claims they're tears of happiness. Feigning enthusiasm, he insists she should consume it, explaining it can awaken boundless vital energy. Jin Huai refuses, saying he found it, so he should use it. Huo Su, inwardly fuming, thinks the elixir is useless to him but might be perfect for her. He argues that it would be a waste on him since he's slow to develop, whereas she could make full use of it. Dividing it would dilute its effects, benefiting no one. He insists she should consume it, become stronger, and help restore the sect. Jin Huai, thoughtful, counters that precisely because he lacks natural talent, he needs the elixir to reach his potential. She believes he should consume it to stay by her side. Huo Su grows frustrated, wondering why she's so stubbornly virtuous and unwilling to accept a gift when he's offering it freely. Huo Su realizes that he needs to create a situation where Jin Huai has no choice but to consume the elixir. He gently takes her hand and asks if she could grant this humble request of her junior disciple. Jin Huai, caught off guard, blushes and stammers, unsure how to respond. Huo Su presses on, saying he offers the elixir out of deep respect for his senior brother. Flustered and overwhelmed, Jin Huai finally relents, saying that if he insists so strongly, she'll consume it. Huo Su smirks inwardly, thinking that a little display of earnest friendship was enough to sway her. Jin Huai advises him to be cautious, reminding him to focus on properly absorbing energy when the time comes. She thanks him and begins studying the manuscripts to prepare herself. Huo Su watches in awe at how quickly she flips through the pages, impressed by her capacity to absorb so much knowledge. Only someone with an extraordinary body and talent could do that, he muses. Shortly after, Jin Huai declares she's memorized everything and approaches the elixir. Holding it in her hand, she reflects on the incredible gift Huo Su has given her. Out of respect for his decision, she vows to absorb the elixir fully. But the moment she consumes it, a freezing sensation overtakes her body. It feels as though her heart is encased in ice. Huo Su asks what's wrong, but Jin Huai collapses, overwhelmed by the immense power coursing through her. A fierce wind surges through the cave as Huo Su realizes the energy is too violent for her to handle. Seeing her body freeze is a clear sign that something is going wrong. Inside her mind, Jin Huai finds herself in a surreal mental realm. She recognizes this as the result of consuming the elixir. As a menacing energy approaches, she tries to absorb it, only to be thrown into a sea of chaotic memories. She recalls a painful incident from her past, a crow attacking and killing other birds. In a fit of rage, she killed the crow, but was judged harshly, accused of being a monster despite her innocence. Suddenly, she is confronted by a demonic version of herself, which attacks her relentlessly. Outside, Huo Su observes the storm of energy emanating from Jin Huai, and realizes that the demon within the elixir is assaulting her mind. Believing her extraordinary talent would allow her to overcome it, he underestimated the toll it would take. Reluctantly, Huo Su steps forward, muttering about his dislike of unnecessary contact, but knowing he must intervene. He embraces Jin Huai, placing his hand on the back of her neck and channeling his yang energy to stabilize her. In her dream, Jin Huai hears Huo Su's voice urging her to guide the elixir's energy through her body. If she fails, she will succumb to a demonic state. The cave grows colder and Huo Su marvels that her body hasn't frozen entirely yet. But he refuses to let her succumb, knowing she is vital to rebuilding the sect. Inside her mind, the demon tightens its grip, demanding answers to her inner fears and doubts. Grabbing a rock, Jin Huai strikes the demon and runs, determined not to be consumed by it. Yet deep down, she knows this demon feeds on her weaknesses, always lurking in moments of vulnerability. Huo Su's voice cuts through again, urging her not to give up. Golden energy surrounds her, and she realizes it's Huo Su's power stabilizing her from the outside. He reassures her that the pain she's feeling is necessary to create an opening for her to succeed. Despite the immense risk, Huo Su channels his energy to guide hers, refusing to let her fail. The demon lunges at her again, but Jin Huai counters with a decisive punch, sending it sprawling. Though victorious, she collapses, coughing up blood from the strain. She realizes Huo Su isn't just helping her absorb the elixir, but also purging the demon from her mind. Determined to follow his guidance, she sits cross-legged, focusing on matching his energy flow. However, the demon rises again, emerging from the surrounding debris. Outside, Huo Su feels his presence and raises barriers of yang energy to shield her. He shouts for her to seize the moment the energy is nearly fully integrated. As the demon makes one final charge, Jin Huai opens her eyes and counters with overwhelming force. The demon crumbles, sinking into the earth as the chaotic energy dissipates. Outside, the cave falls silent. Huo Su, exhausted but relieved, congratulates Jin Huai on her breakthrough. In her mind, Jin Huai reflects on how Huo Su has supported her since the day they met. From caring about her feelings to sacrificing what was most valuable to him for her growth, his actions leave her deeply moved. She resolves to repay his kindness no matter the cost, vowing to stand by his side even if the entire world turns against him. As Huo Su watches her absorb energy and advance spiritually, he feels satisfied, knowing her growth is a critical step in rebuilding the sect. Huo Su stands, thinking that the ordeal was difficult but ultimately worth it. Still, he wonders if this cursed cave really doesn't have a Moto Elixir, something that could help him regain the power of his past life. Instead, he stumbled upon the worst possible option, Yin Energy, which he has no desire to absorb after his experiences in the past. While scanning the cave, his eyes catch a small red plant tucked behind a rock. Finally, he's found something enveloped in Yang energy. Though it's not as rare as the pearl-like elixir they found earlier, it's still a valuable discovery. Approaching the plant, Chiwilsu is struck by its quality. He eagerly picks it, shoves it into his mouth, and begins cultivating. Rather than using the plant's energy solely to strengthen his internal power, he channels it throughout his body, enhancing his vitality and overall health. This is the perfect moment for him to develop the power of a true man. For the first time in ages, he feels the genuine Yang energy coursing through him. Though he hasn't advanced as much as Jin Hui, he's gained a body immune to illness. A short while later, he stands imagining that Jin Hui might have gone to bathe after their training. Given that this is a sacred place where ancestors practice, there's bound to be at least one bathing area. Nearby, Jin Hui is indeed taking a bath, exclaiming how amazing it feels. Chiwilsu calls out from a distance, asking where she is. Jin Hui panics, telling him not to come any closer. Chiwilsu sits outside, saying he'll wait there. Jin Hui thanks him, thinking to herself that she can't let him see her like this. As she soaks, she reflects on how close Chiwilsu came to discovering her true identity as a woman. Disguising herself as a man her whole life has left her uncertain in situations like this. When she first joined the sect, her master advised her to conceal her gender to avoid complications. Despite the risks, she feels grateful for having successfully absorbed the elixir, knowing she couldn't have done it without Chiwilsu's help. It's incredible to her that someone so young could support her so selflessly, not only offering such a precious item without hesitation, but also enduring the difficulties alongside her without complaint. Now she wants to find a way to help Chiwilsu in return. She blushes, confused by the strange feelings she's experiencing. Her heart races as she imagines being closer to him, supporting him through his struggles. Caught up in her thoughts, she envisions walking through a garden with him, never wanting to leave his side. Startled, she snaps out of it and chastises herself for such silly imaginings. She convinces herself that Chiwilsu is like a younger brother, nothing more. She resolves to focus on rebuilding the sect and becoming one of the strongest martial artists, continuing her disguise for as long as necessary in this patriarchal martial world. Outside, Chiwilsu wonders aloud why his friend is taking so long. A man's bath shouldn't take more than 5 minutes, he mutters. He marvels at the cave's spaciousness, with pearls and glowing minerals embedded in the walls representing the wealth of Gondong. It's astonishing to him that a sect capable of producing the greatest swordsman in history fell so far. He recalls that in his past life, after the sect was attacked, only the Thunder Sword survived. That swordsman, Zhang Yun, the current leader of Gondong, became infamous not for his skill, but for being the sole survivor of the massacre. The title Demon Slayer was given mockingly as others considered him a coward who lived while everyone else perished. Recovering the lost martial texts is essential for the sect's revival. Chiwilsu knows that while this cave holds remnants of their history, it also hides mysteries. In his past life, when he visited the cave, it had already collapsed. Now it stands perfectly preserved, suggesting its destruction wasn't natural. Jin Hui suddenly emerges, glowing and refreshed, and tells Chiwilsu to go take a bath. Chiwilsu, flustered by her radiance, punches himself in the face to clear his thoughts. In the bath, he wrestles with his irritation, wondering why his friend keeps getting more attractive. Slamming his fist into the water, he grumbles about the demon driving him crazy. When he returns, he finds Jin Hui organizing several recovered books. She explains that she's sorting the martial texts they retrieved. Chiwilsu gets excited, realizing these will be foundational for Gongdong's revival. However, he notices that none of the sect's famous primordial techniques are among the texts. He asks Jin Hui if these 7 books are all she found. She confirms, adding that she didn't see anything resembling the Demon Slayer's technique. Chiwilsu grows confused. In his past life, that technique was found in this very cave. This suggests that the legendary swordsman Mu Juche left the technique in a non-written form, complicating its recovery. Now, Chiwilsu must figure out how the master who transcended life and reached immortality chose to preserve his legacy. Jin Hui suddenly exclaims that she's found something, a series of sword marks on the cave wall. She rushes ahead, urging Chiwilsu to follow, saying he'll understand when they get there. In another part of the cave, they discover a wall covered in deep cuts. Chiwilsu approaches and, upon touching it, senses something unusual. He deduces it's a mechanical structure from 300 years ago, designed to open only when the right amount of force is applied. However, using the wrong energy could cause the entire place to collapse. Jin Hui theorizes that without the correct Demon Slayer technique, the door won't open. Chiwilsu agrees but suggests there may still be a way. He explains that although he doesn't fully understand the technique, the Imperial Palace has long studied martial arts from various sects to maintain control over martial artists. The Demon Slayer technique, being as famous as it is, was certainly among those studied. Chiwilsu is confident that the secret behind the mastery of the sword lies beyond this wall. Walking alongside the sword marks, he studies their patterns. Jin Hui, puzzled, asks what he's doing but soon notices subtle paths on the floor that seem to guide their movements. Following the paths, Chiwilsu stops before a wall overgrown with plants. Drawing his sword, he slashes at it, revealing markings beneath. He calls Jin Hui over, asking if she can decipher them. The complexity of the markings requires 2 full days to interpret, Slowly, they piece together the technique, realizing it starts at one end of the cave and ends at the other. By retracing the sword's movements and using reverse engineering with the tools they recover from Gondong, they begin to correct each motion. Jin Hui frequently asks if her stance is correct, and Xiu Su, often frustrated, makes adjustments. What annoys him most is the thought that his first lessons in this world should have been for a beautiful, adoring woman, not this infuriating Jin Hui, who seems to overshadow all the experiences he hoped to reserve for his ideal partner. When hunger strikes, they sustain themselves on energy pills, pressing on until they've completed their calculations. At last, the day comes to test their efforts. Qiu Su nearly hugs Jin Hui in celebration but stops himself, remembering Jin Hui is a man. Jin Hui prepares herself and asks if all that remains is to use the technique. Qiu Su confirms, noting that only she can perform it. Jin Hui admits she's not confident, reminding him that the master always said the Demon Slayer technique requires a celestial foundation. Qiu Su reassures her, explaining that 300 years have made the structure more vulnerable. He uses his proficiency in energy manipulation to loosen some of the seals, creating an easier path for her to succeed. He tells her the time has come. Jin Hui takes a deep breath, ripping her sword tightly. Qiu Su reflects that where he lacks Yin energy, she excels, and where she lacks Yang energy, he compensates. Together, they're uniquely suited to this task. Jin Hui leaps into the air, her strike sending a shockwave through the cave. The wall begins to open. Overjoyed, Jin Hui runs to Qiu Su, asking how he knew it would work. Before he can answer, she continues, excitedly saying this means the lost techniques must be inside. Beaming with gratitude, she calls him a genius, but Qiu Su tempers her enthusiasm, reminding her it's too early to celebrate. They still need to discover what the Celestial Sword Lord left behind. Advancing into the darkness, Qiu Su suddenly collapses. When he wakes, he finds himself bound in chains. The ceiling above feels eerily familiar. A man in glasses approaches, asking if this is the child. An older man confirms it, saying the boy is astray from Heidong City and will fetch a high price at the palace. Turning to Qiu Su, the man says, "Ah, so you're finally awake." Qiu Su's heart sinks as memories flood back. This was the day he lost his masculinity and was sold to the palace. Realizing the truth, he understands that when they opened the door, he fell into an illusion. Despite the surreal surroundings, he knows this is no dream. It's a trap left by the Celestial Sword Lord. Seething with rage, Qiu Su vows to make that old master pay for this torment. The boy in the illusion comments that life in the palace wouldn't be so bad, suggesting Qiu Su could even become a eunuch with enough power to change the world. These words infuriate Qiu Su further because, in his past life, he achieved exactly that, becoming the second most powerful figure in the empire, second only to the empress. He clenches his fists, his resolve hardening. Though the illusion is meant to break him, Qiu Su decides to turn it into an opportunity to uncover the true legacy of the Celestial Sword Lord. Qiu Su begins to question the purpose of all this power. In his past life as a eunuch, even with immense strength and influence, he couldn't enjoy life's pleasures. This realization reignites his frustration, labeling his past self a damned bastard. Energy begins to surge from his body. Though his internal energy diminished after traveling back in time, his physical form has been restored, and his mind remains sharp and intact. The illusionary figures around him, representations of the men who once captured and sold him, demand to know how he's doing this, but their words freeze mid-sentence. Qiu Su knows this is happening in his mental realm, a place where all his knowledge of cultivation remains intact. The figures suddenly shatter into nothingness before his eyes. Looking down at the symbolic remnants of his past, the broken cacti on the ground, Qiu Su's anger intensifies. He's already killed these men in his past life, being haunted by them again is infuriating. Suddenly, a soft voice whispers from behind him, praising him for his incredible strength. A group of alluring women surrounds him, one leaning in to kiss him. But Qiu Su isn't fooled. Drawing on his ki, he obliterates the illusion, scattering the women into nothingness. Despite having desires like any man, he's not one to lose control. After all, he spent a lifetime dreaming of women. This tactic doesn't work on him. It's clear that Qiu Su survived not for shallow indulgences, but because of his unwavering willpower. At that moment, a commanding figure emerges from the shadows, the Celestial Sword Lord, Mu Jucha. "You've exceeded my expectations," the figure remarks, his voice resonating with authority. Qiu Su moves to respond, but before he can speak, Mu Jucha launches an attack. A crackling blade of lightning slashes toward him. "Let's see if you can handle this," Mu Jucha challenges. Qiu Su, startled by the immense aura radiating from the master, channels his energy into forming barriers while dodging the onslaught. Despite his best efforts, one strike lands squarely on his abdomen, sending him hurtling backward. Gasping for breath, Qiu Su realizes the truth. Standing before him is the very person who halted the demonic invasion 300 years ago, the legendary Celestial Sword Lord, Mu Jucha. He continues to dodge while telling the man to listen, insisting that he's not an enemy, and asks if he doesn't recognize him. Mu Jucha immediately responds, saying that it seems like he thinks he's an idiot. Even though he could see that the boy had the mindset of an absolute master, he didn't possess the martial power of someone in the first class. Furthermore, the aura of rebellion surrounded his body, making it impossible for him to claim innocence. That's why he's certain the boy is a spy from the Blood Demon cult. Hyosu collapses to the ground without responding, and the man launches an attack demanding an explanation. Suddenly, Hyosu seems to have an idea, bows deeply, and introduces himself as Lechiosu, a disciple of the Gundong sect. He then welcomes the man as his ancestor. At the last second, the attack changes direction and misses him. Out of nowhere, Mujucha starts laughing and says that he truly is a very clever successor. It seems that Hyosu used a technique recognized only by members of the Gundong sect. The man congratulates him for thinking of it in such a critical moment. He then introduces himself as the Celestial Swordmaster from 300 years ago, and adds that this is the first time he's seen someone walking the path of reversal and immortality. Hyosu says that reversing time isn't a problem, as he is still a disciple of the Gundong sect. Mujucha agrees to some extent, saying it really isn't that important. He mentions fighting fire with fire and asks if this is the will of the heavens. Looking at Hyosu, he declares that facing anomalies with an anomaly is the natural law. Our boy, though, is utterly confused by all this talk of fire against fire and anomalies. The real reason Hyosu did all this was simply to regain his masculinity, not for any secret technique or anything of the sort. He explains that he ended up in this place while searching for the legacy of the sword, and he's certain that there's nothing else in this place, so it must be here. The man asks what he plans to do if that's the case. Hyosu replies that he has a request. He wants the man to teach this martial art not to him, but to the boy who came with him. Hyosu's plan is pretty sly. He already has all the trust he needs from Jin Hui, so it's perfect for this man to rebuild the sect. That's because he knows that whoever becomes the Celestial Sword Lord will gain absolute power, but also countless obligations. All he wants is to be second in command, extremely influential, but without too many responsibilities, just enjoying life and the company of friends. Mujucha acknowledges his cleverness and wonders if perhaps destiny brought him here. However, he remarks that Hyosu's way of thinking is foolish because he hasn't realized something yet. An inevitable disaster is about to strike this place once again. Hyosu is utterly confused, not understanding what the man is referring to. As far as he knows, the demon blood cult was completely eradicated by this man 300 years ago. However, he's also certain the man wouldn't say such a thing without reason. So he asks if the demon blood cult is really going to return. The man replies that he can't say much because of a heavenly prohibition. Wow, that's news to me. And Hyosu is standing there, unsure of what to ask next. He knows this blood cult is an extremist faction that was, of course, created by the demon sect. They are bloodthirsty for war and destroy everything in their path whenever they appear. The same cult created a river of blood when they attacked the Gongdong Mountains, and the Wang Dynasty, which lived on the plains at the time, flooded because of them. Shortly before the demon cult could conquer the entire region, the Celestial Lord appeared and defeated them. This victory unified the entire Mirim Alliance, and with it, the Ming Dynasty was established. The martial groups were granted royal privileges for their contributions. It was the Pact of Non-Interference. He knows that in the past, the demon cult didn't do anything, so why would it be any different in this era? One thing, however, is obvious. Is a different person from the one who existed before. In the worst-case scenario, both the demon sect and the blood cult could invade this place simultaneously. Even with someone powerful, it wouldn't be easy to handle such a situation. Now he doesn't just have one problem, but two. Wars sow feelings of anxiety, worry, and an uncertain future. This affects everyone, regardless of how much wealth they have. If the entire country is suffering because of war, how is he supposed to go around charming women who'll all be crying in their beds? A desperate woman says she can't believe her lord might die in battle, and Hyosu imagines himself crying over all the lost opportunities. A future like that was completely unacceptable. Worries like this would prevent him from creating the perfect paradise. However, from what he understood, he was chosen by Mujucha, since the lord is not there. And since he has no choice but to become stronger, this was an opportunity he had to seize. Of course, that doesn't mean he wants to play the hero and take on the world's responsibilities. After all, that would be too much work. But remembering the empress he helped create, he swears he won't allow these demons to wreak havoc in these lands. Mujucha then says he seems ready, and asks if he wants to learn the teachings of the Unified Sword. Hyosu wants to know what he'd need to learn it since he thought having a boy from the Gundong sect was enough. Mujucha then says he knows the boy's thoughts are impure, and asks if he doesn't want to use these techniques to become powerful and indulge in karma pleasures. Hyosu pauses for a second and says his intentions are not impure. The union of yin and yang is a natural principle of life. He's not a demon driven by desires, and the Celestial Master himself saw him break that illusion formation. All he wants is to pursue his desires in the right way. He wants to achieve enlightenment through the harmony between man and woman. To him, women represent pure devotion, love, and desire, and he wants to make all of them as happy as possible. This is completely different from seeing them as mere playthings, which is what a true villain would do. Mujucha is baffled by the boy's philosophy, and wonders what crime a woman would have to commit in her life to get involved with someone like him. But Hyosu assures him not to worry because he'd always take responsibility, otherwise he wouldn't have started this in the first place. Mujucha is impressed that the boy is truly motivated by this. He then laughs and says he'll at least give him some credit for being so ambitious. He warns, however, that if Chiyosu wants to learn this martial art, he'll have to discard any mental foundations he's created. Kibosu says that's not a problem. He hates the martial foundation of Yen he currently has. Mujuchi declares that since he's so resolute, they'll begin. He will learn the supreme martial art that belongs to this sect, the celestial unification of the art of harmony. Wow, such grandiose names. The two appear in a kind of floating sea, and Chiyosu is completely confused, looking around. Mujuchi says this is the unification of harmony. It's the depth of yin and yang that he'll only comprehend if he masters the celestial art. Back in the cave, he hears the master's voice telling him he must dedicate himself to learning the dual harmony technique. Suddenly, he wakes up and sees Jin Hui beside him. He tells his sister to wake up and touches her shoulder. She asks what happened, saying she saw the master disappear and the pavilion burning. He then explains that both of them were caught in the celestial master's illusion. He managed to survive and now knows what's there. That box contained the dual harmony technique, part of the legacy left behind. Suddenly, the cave begins to collapse. He runs for the box and says they must grab it quickly and get out of there. It was the swordsman's power that kept this place intact, and now that he's gone, everything will fall apart. Jin Hui points to a glowing stone on the side, and the two run out. As they leave the cave, Chiyosu looks to the side and sees Mujuchi's vision. It vanishes just as he reaches the entrance. However, the boy says nothing and just keeps moving forward. Shortly after, they manage to get outside. Jin Hui comments that it's been so long since he's even seen sunlight, and now the cave has completely collapsed, so obviously there's no going back. However, he feels relieved that at least some martial arts techniques were recovered. Kibosu says it's time to return to the base because they have a lot to organize. But before that, there's a place he needs to visit. In the city, someone asks a little boy why he's standing there lost in thought. It's his mother, telling him to wake up because his grandfather is already in bad shape. He apologizes and says he's already packed everything. At that moment, the old man comes out of the house and asks if they really have to leave this place. She says yes, considering how poor they are and that all their money was taken. They have nothing left to do here. At the very least, they need to go somewhere they can make a living. It's been a week since the boy visited the Gongdong sect, and he wonders if the two are doing well. He's worried that perhaps what he said might have put them in danger, until someone knocks on the wood and asks if anyone's there. Obviously, it's the pair of mischievous boys who've arrived. The mother asks who they are, and our boy introduces himself. Jin Hui explains that her son asked them to find the culprit who destroyed their home and stole from them, and they've returned now that they've resolved the case. The grandfather and the woman are a bit skeptical that they actually did this. The boy drops the bag on the ground and runs to hug the two of them. Meanwhile, Chiyosu is complaining that the kid didn't leave an address, so it was hard to find him. However, he explains that they've now avenged the snake that destroyed the place, and he thanks the boy for letting them know because it was thanks to him that they prevented more people from getting hurt. He then reaches into his pocket and says he has something for them. It's a core from inside the snake's body. It should be properly prepared and given to his grandfather. If he consumes it fully, his health will improve. The boy thanks them crying and the grandfather steps closer. Suddenly, he begins crying as well. A little while later, it seems they're leaving, and with that, they've left the city. The two stood there in silence. Kibosu says that sometimes he wishes he were stronger so he could show more gratitude to those who care about Gongdong. Kibosu takes a look and then starts walking, saying it's time to return. They don't have time to get distracted and need to rebuild that place. His friend agrees, and with that, they head off together. Kibosu is excited. With the boy and the snake's help, they've gained a great opportunity. However, it's also placed a huge responsibility on him. He imagines that the Chiyosu from the past life didn't manage to awaken the divine fusion technique. But when he went there, the cave was already collapsed. This means someone else went to that place and recovered the techniques. And what if that person was a descendant of the Blood Demon sect? Maybe he destroyed the cave to get rid of the technique once and for all and erase Gongdong's history. One thing is certain, there's a hostile entity moving right now. Now, after all this, he begins to wonder, how are the two of them going to explain all this to their master? As he climbs the stairs, the master appears behind them and asks if it's them. They turn around looking a bit embarrassed, asking how he's doing. Immediately, the leader comes at them and smacks them both upside the head. He demands to know why they disappeared and what they were doing while he was away. Sometime later, it seems everything has been explained and he asks if it's really true. Jin Hui confirms and our boy says that Luminous Pearl was taken from the cave. Looking through the books, the leader says there's no doubt, it's all genuine. Out of nowhere, the man starts crying emotionally, saying they've recovered techniques that had been lost. It was truly a stroke of luck, maybe even the blessing of the ancestors falling upon them. Obviously, as much as they deserve credit, it was still an unauthorized adventure. For what they managed to accomplish, they wouldn't be punished. However, they'd better ensure something like this doesn't happen again. The leader then hugs them and says they're welcome back. Later on, they're seen writing some things in the manuals. Jin Hui was helping the leader organize everything. The leader commented that the Luminous Pearl would also be a great help. At least for now, they wouldn't go hungry and wouldn't have enough to sustain themselves. At that, Kyosu mentions that it might not be a good idea to reveal to the public that they recovered all this. The leader asks if he means they shouldn't sell the pearl, as everyone would know what happened. Hilsu says yes. His peace is what matters. Whatever the nature of all this, it symbolizes the demon cult. Additionally, the reincarnation technique he used in his past life was a forbidden magic, something that also belonged to the demon sect. It's probably related to the mark Mujutsu saw on him. And he recalls that, alongside the Empress, they eradicated the entire demon cult. But he never imagined there were other hidden forces. If even in his past life they didn't know of this existence, it's still dangerous for him now. At this moment, before attracting any attention, they need to become as strong as possible. He then tells the master that rebuilding the sect is only just beginning, and showing the world a treasure without having the power to protect it will only bring disaster. The Luminous Pearl is an extremely rare material that many people desire. The leader says he understands and agrees that Chiyosu isn't wrong. He also knows that the Shadow Society has been gaining significant power in the Gansu province. Jin Hui seems unfamiliar with it. The leader explains that in the past, it was just a group of bandits. But recently, they've been gaining a lot of influence. He then says that for now, they won't reveal to anyone the existence of all this. He opens the door to the room and tells the two to follow him. He couldn't ignore all they had done, so it was time to go out to eat. They head to the Gongdong Inn. This makes Chiyosu very excited. He knows the White Lonely Flower is in this place, and finally, he'll be able to meet Su Heron. However, as he walks through the city, all he sees are beggars starving. Chiyosu wonders if there really will be an inn in a place like this. The leader says he must be surprised at how rundown the area is. He explains that it's all because of the weakness of the Gongdong sect. As they lost relevance, the local businesses also weakened. In the past, this was an extremely bustling place full of wealth and life, but now it's barely surviving. The atmosphere in the streets isn't peaceful at all, especially with the emergence of the Shadow Society. Chiyosu remembers that even in his past life, many people wanted to conquer the Gansu province. The leader says, however, that there's one good thing amidst all this. The Gongdong Inn, the most important thing in this place, is still operating. Chiyosu, now drooling, is ecstatic. He says the entire world could collapse as long as this place remains intact. He then tells the master that this place is truly perfect. Nothing carries the name of Gongdong as well as it does. The leader thanks him, relieved to hear that, and tells them to go inside. Inside, the atmosphere is quite calm. Chiyosu is impressed that despite the empty streets, the inn is quite lively. Suddenly, a man introduces himself to the leader, saying it's been a long time since they've seen each other. His name is Siyuan Wang, and he's the owner of the inn. He tells the leader to follow him and seats the three of them at a table. Zhang Yun comments that the place is as good as ever. The man says he's too kind and then asks who the young man is. Chiyosu introduces himself as the new disciple of the sect. The man congratulates him for all the energy he exudes, saying he'll surely help restore the Gongdong sect. Chiyosu thanks him as well, but is confused because this man seems overly kind. That's when he starts to notice. Everyone in the bar is staring at him, talking about how Gongdong's martial artists have arrived. It really seemed like he was an inspiring young man, and it was undoubtedly a good day for them to be there. Chiyosu is completely puzzled. He's not a famous martial artist, so why are they giving him so much attention? Wan Wang tells him not to be so surprised. These are just people and friends who are eagerly awaiting the restoration of the Gongdong sect. This inn currently serves as a meeting point for those opposed to the Shadow Society. That's why everyone here is genuinely rooting for Gongdong's recovery. Suddenly, people seem to be counting some coins. A man runs over and offers them to the leader, asking him to accept the money and use it to restore Gongdong. The leader tells him to be a bit more patient, but soon the two disciples will revive the sect. Chiyosu is still there, unable to process all this love. At that moment, the leader asks where the man's daughter is. Wan Wang says he sent Heron on a mission, but she'll be back soon. Naturally, this is a name Chiyosu has been eagerly waiting to hear. The real reason he's so happy to be here. The only daughter of the inn's owner and the most beautiful flower. In his past life, she was also one of the people who led Gongdong's restoration. The Sword Saints were her and Jingwei. At the front lines, Jingwei provided strength, while Harim was like a CEO managing the sect's administration. She was said to be a mix of mysterious beauty, known as the Lonely Flower. Because of her sword skills, she was also nicknamed the Ice Blade Princess. Her charm resembled that of a white rose with thorns. Of course, because of this, she even had fan clubs across the faction. Men would send her letters asking to be struck by her blade. And naturally, Chiyosu, now with his masculinity restored, can't miss such an opportunity. He's extremely eager to see her wonderful appearance. The door opens, white hair passes by, and he's filled with anticipation. Then a child walks in. He forgot that he had gone back in time and is utterly shocked. He's dismayed that she's still so young in this timeline. She tells her father she's back. Meanwhile, he's blaming himself for forgetting that he really went many years into the past. He still thinks she's a pretty girl, but since she's so young, of course, he feels nothing. In fact, looking at her, he feels the same way he did when looking at the Empress. He wants to protect her from the world and help her grow. The father picks up a basket and tells her to greet the disciples of the Gongdong sect. She says hello, and Chiyosu finds her admirable, thinking she's so cute. Even if it's just as an older brother, he can't miss the chance to get closer to her. After all, having a sister nearby would be nice. He introduces himself as Chiyosu, a disciple of the Gongdong sect. But she stares at him. Before he finishes speaking, she walks away. The girl runs to the door and slams it shut. Inside, she wonders how he can smile when he can't protect anyone. The Gongdong sect was useless, and she hated them. She hated them and the entire martial world. As soon as she leaves, of course, her father apologizes. He said his daughter was a bit shy when it came to strangers. Zhang Yang reassured him, saying it was fine. After all, she was just a child. Hyul Soo, knowing her past, wasn't surprised by her behavior. A fight had broken out between some sects in the area, and her mother ended up dying in the chaos. Even the Gongdong sect couldn't help that day, which led her to resent everyone. However, he felt sad seeing someone so young shutting herself off like that. Sometime later, he thanked them for the meal. At least the food there was excellent, and he finally got a bit of protein after so long. He glanced to the side and saw Heron passing by, who immediately ran off when she noticed him. Out of nowhere, Jin Huai appeared right in front of him, asking if he enjoyed the outing today. He said yes while wondering why this guy always got so close when speaking. Meanwhile, Jin Hui was glowing, saying he was thrilled that Chul Su liked it. Our boy continued to be stunned by how handsome this guy was. It's no wonder that, in the past life, Heron was always around him. At this rate, Hyul Soo wouldn't even manage to become her big brother, so he had to figure out a way to beat him. He then slammed the table and told the master that they should go out like this more often. This outing made him realize the people's expectations and how everyone supported Gongdong. It inspired him to work harder every day. He wanted to become a true martial artist to be worthy of all this support. When the master said they'd visit once a month, Hyul Soo thanked him. Excited, he was determined to make Heron his little sister. He couldn't lose to Jin Hui again. Night fell, and they were back at the sect. Hyul Soo said he'd been neglecting what made him an impressive man. He pulled out a small stone tied to a rope and declared it was time to begin hanging exercises. Man, his pants dropped, and I can already imagine what he was planning. This exercise strengthened the male organ and was essential for increasing virility. Now that he was starting to master his martial techniques, his training had to be at peak level in every area. He opened his eyes and the stone began to swing. Man, it seems night turned to day and he was still there, the stone swaying back and forth. A whole year must have passed, no doubt about it. And the guy was laughing to himself, saying he finally become a real man. The fact that he reached this level after a year of training made him a legendary master of virility. He then sat down and said it was time to enjoy this sensation. He began focusing his energy, but suddenly a golden glow started emanating, leaving him confused. Ever since he merged with that technique from the cave and combined it with these peculiar practices, something strange was happening. Every time he activated his key powers, something down below rose. He had no idea how he was going to manage this. At this rate, it wouldn't be long before he was seen as a pervert everywhere he went. Suddenly, Jin Hui appeared, calling for him. Poor Chul Su was on the floor, crying and wondering why this guy always showed up at the worst times. He opened the door, covering himself, and asked why the senior was there. Jin Hui informed him that today was the day they were heading out, and he was waiting for him. The master had told them to go to Huajiang County first, so he should get ready quickly. Hyul Soo was relieved that his friend hadn't noticed the situation. However, he'd recently noticed Jin Hui acting a bit strange. Maybe puberty was hitting the guy. At the inn, Heron poured tea for the two of them. As soon as Hyul Soo thanked her, she ran off again. Though she still avoided him, it was much better than the first few times he visited. However, something seemed off. The inn was unusually deserted. Jin Hui noticed it too, and mentioned it. Suddenly, Wan Guan greeted them warmly. He introduced himself again, and our boy asked how he was doing. But he quickly realized that something was clearly wrong. Wan Wang simply asked if they wanted their usual order, and Chul Su confirmed. As he went to fetch it, he suddenly seemed to stumble. Heron screamed for him, and Chul Su rushed over, asking what had happened. Wan Wang assured them he was fine and told them not to worry. It was just his health, not being in the best shape. Chul Su then asked what was happening at the inn and why there was no one around. Wan Wang revealed that soon, he would have to close the place. It was all because of the Shadow Society villains. They were gaining more and more power and using their influence to extort everyone in the city. A few months ago, they began threatening the inn. They started preventing any merchants from trading with them. Because of the fights outside, no one wanted to come in. They'd been trying to hold on for a while, but with no customers, the bills were piling up. He was starting to worry about Heron's safety, so he decided it was time to close. Now Chul Su understood why Heron joined the Gongdong sect, even though she hated martial artists. It was probably her father's decision, hoping she'd find a place where she'd be protected. Even though the Shadow Society was just a group of bandits, they still had the support of the Black Dragon of Sichuan. Looking at Wan Guang, Hyul Soo knew it was nearly impossible for an ordinary person to solve problems with martial artists. But just then, someone knocked sharply on the door. Someone yells his name and three bandits burst in, shouting that today's the day he pays his debts. They demand either the money or the entire inn as collateral. One of them grabs Heron and says that if they won't sell the inn, they'll take her instead. Jin Hui rises to his feet as Heron's father tries to rush to save her. The man holding Heron declares that from now on, she'll work for the Shadow Society to pay off her father's debts. She begins crying, saying no, and tries to wriggle free before running off. Suddenly, Chul Su calls out to them. The man pulling Heron stops when chopsticks fly through the air and pierce his hand. He screams, and the other two draw their swords, demanding to know who dares interfere. Chul Su simply says, "The girl said no." From his robe, the men recognize him as a member of the Gongdong sect and question how such a dead place could dare challenge them. But one of them warns his brothers to be cautious. They're dealing with the madman. They point out that Chul Su seems unusually armed. Chul Su, realizing the embarrassing situation, covers himself, furious that his energy leaked out and caused this. Meanwhile, Heron runs to her father, hugging him tightly. From behind, Jin Hui calls out to Chul Su, asking if this martial technique of his is meant to confuse his opponents. Chul Su responds sarcastically, amazed at how well Jin Hui understands his intentions. Meanwhile, the bandits burst into laughter. They say they've never seen anything like this and that it's pure comedy. They thought Jin Hui and Chul Su were pretty unich, but now they see the boy is packing a solid mountain. What kind of talk is this, seriously? One of them points his sword, saying that now that they've messed with their group, they'll have to pay the price in blood. Chul Su crouches down and says, "Fine, take whatever you want. But if you fail, you'll lose your most precious jewels." The bandit warns him to be careful with his words. Chul Su tells Jin Hui he'll handle this and asks his senior to protect Heron in the meantime. Jin Hui agrees and moves toward Heron and her father. The father, worried, asks if it's really okay to leave the boy alone. Jin Hui reassures him, saying not to worry. Chul Su is much stronger than he seems. At that moment, one of the bandits charges at Chul Su, swinging his sword. Chul Su ducks, picks up a twig, and delivers a precise blow to each bandit's jewels. The third bandit, watching this unfold, starts to panic. Chul Su advances and declares that he'll crack 6 eggs with a single spoon. Blood sprays everywhere. Moments later, a Gum's leader arrives and asks if everyone is okay. Looking down at the broken bandits, he asks what exactly happened here. Chul Su apologizes, saying he caused unnecessary damage while trying to restore order. One Guang speaks up, thanking them. If it weren't for the boys, they would have lost everything today. The leader admits the bandits are getting bolder, trying to rob the inn outright. He declares that they'll finish them off today. But one Guang begs them not to. Everyone knows the Shadow Society has the Black Dragon's support, and he doesn't want Heron to continue suffering from such tragedies. The leader agrees, saying that if it's up to the Gongdong sect, Heron will be well cared for. Chul Su steps forward and tells the leader to wait. At this rate, Heron would join the sect as a disciple, just like in his past life. But he didn't think it was the best choice to force a child so young to go against her own heart. The better path would be to give her the freedom to choose her own destiny without enduring so much pain. He tells the leader that what is seen cannot be ignored. If they turn a blind eye to the problems of someone so close, the Gongdong sect would never recover. The leader considers his words and agrees. It would be wrong to ignore the altruistic actions of a disciple. However, he asks what Chul Su's plan is for dealing with the Black Dragon. Chul Su says he'll send a letter challenging the Black Dragon in the name of the Gongdong sect. The leader, confused, asks if they'll really accept such a challenge. Chul Su says they'll make an offer so tempting that they won't be able to refuse. The scene shifts to the Black Dragon sect. The challenge bypassed the Shadow Society entirely and went straight to them. One of the members scoffs, saying these Gongdong fools don't know their place. The challenge is for a consecutive 2-versus-3 fight. If Gongdong loses, they'll close their gates for 50 years. If the Black Dragon loses, they'll abandon the region. The Black Dragon sect leader remarks that the terms are too advantageous. It's clearly a trap. But he's confident because they have Wei Soryong, the deaf Black Dragon. As he contemplates, someone interrupts, saying there's no need to worry. A stunning woman strides in, declaring that she'll handle this personally. Her name is Yu Yeryong. What a name. Help us out, girl. Yu Yeryong, known as the Tiger of the Blade, declares that she will handle the matter personally due to the rumors spreading about the Shadow Society. She had heard that one of the Gongdong disciples was boasting about turning 3 Shadow Society members into units without even drawing a blade. All he needed was a spoon. Naturally, the one spreading this rumor was none other than Chul Su himself, who had told the story to anyone willing to listen. People were impressed, never imagining a young master could humiliate their members so thoroughly. Chul Su kept saying it was clear the Shadow Society was weak, so the Black Dragon must be even worse. During a meeting, someone apologized to Miss Yeo, admitting their mistake. She placed a reassuring hand on his shoulder, telling him not to worry, she would handle it personally. She then asked if the boy spreading the rumor was named Lee Chul Su. Meanwhile, Chul Su had earned quite a bit of money from his storytelling. Many now recognize him as the righteous hero who dealt with the Shadow Society. He was already imagining the incomparable beauties who would fall for his tale. However, it was Miss Yu who was coming for him, muttering that the boy was underestimating their sect. Blissfully unaware, Chul Su was shadowboxing, declaring that nothing captured a woman's heart more than a man fighting for justice. He was already picturing women in his mind swooning over him and calling him a wonderful hero. As his energy surged, he had to cover himself again. This problem just wouldn't go away. But this time, he knew he had to be more cautious. Dealing with these people wouldn't be so easy. Even though he invited these bastards to a fair duel, he had to stay sharp because they were villains. While the fight was supposed to be just, it was obvious something shady would happen. As a seasoned martial artist, he understood they had likely hired a masked assassin. Looking up, Chiu Su sighed, remarking that bad people seemed to have a sickness that made them die if they didn't cause trouble. That's when he noticed something. The assassin had arrived, and she was incredibly dangerous. The first thing he noticed was, of course, that it was a woman. In his past life, he had fought the Shadow Society 4 years into the future. But he didn't recall ever seeing a woman among them. Now his jaw dropped. She wasn't just a woman. She had a flawless figure. Qiu Su's attention focused on what mattered. She stopped in front of him and asked if he was the one known as Li Qiu Su. Blushing, he confirmed, "Yes, I am the hero himself." She seemed confused by his reaction. In an instant, she launched an attack, declaring that he would pay the price for challenging the Black Dragon sect. Blows were exchanged, and it was clear Qiu Su could hold his own. She acknowledged that his skills were decent for his age, but it wasn't surprising. She figured the boy believed they would win because of the genius Jin Huai on his side. Qiu Su was struggling to defend himself, but quickly noticed she was far stronger physically than he was. He tried to counter, but she leaped into the air with unmatched grace. In a second, she was back on the ground, moving as lightly as a feather. Her movements were far too refined for someone from an ordinary sect, so who was she? Eriong smirked and teased that he liked to scurry like a little mouse. When she shifted her stance, he recognized the technique immediately. He asked if she wasn't Senior Yue Yang, the Blade of the Tiger. She smiled, confirming his guess. This left Qiu Su worried. What was such a woman doing here? Yue Yang was infamous not only for the burn on her face, but also for her cruel wagers with men. Out of nowhere, she would remove her veil and ask a man if she was beautiful. Lying on the ground, battered, he answered truthfully, saying she was extraordinarily beautiful. She would then smile and call him a liar. If the man couldn't sincerely convince her that he found her beautiful, she would turn him into a eunuch. No man ever passed this test. Of all the problems Qiu Su could face, this was by far the worst. She approached him and said that since he recognized her, he must know about the test. Bravely, he admitted he was aware of it while internally panicking, trying to figure out how to survive this crisis. She removed her veil and commanded him to tell her how beautiful she was in his eyes. Qiu Su thought carefully. He knew he couldn't say something ordinary. He needed to speak words that would move her heart. He was convinced that with a woman like her, only sincerity would work. And if there was one thing that proved a man's sincerity, it was this. The fool activated his energy, letting it flare, and declared that she was truly magnificent. Naturally, the woman was startled and demanded to know what kind of madness he was pulling. Qiu Su explained that he was being sincere after all she had asked. He praised her eyes as being remarkably clear, her hair soft and silky, and her figure so exquisite it challenged the moon and the flowers. That's why he, Li Qiu Su, was declaring in the name of the Gongdong sect that she was stunning. Yue Yang was utterly stunned. She was 60 years old, something Qiu Su didn't know, and had challenged countless men. But never before had she encountered such genuine sincerity. Seeing him glowing, she was now unsure how to dismiss this as a lie. Qiu Su was thrilled that his gamble had worked. He was convinced there had to be a deeper reason behind Yue Yang's infamous bet. Although everyone recognized her as an eccentric martial artist, this persona was merely a disguise. In truth, she was Jiuk Sol, the demon of a thousand faces and the number one figure in the Shadow Sect. She possessed the ability to transform her body, age, or even gender at will. This power fueled her peculiar hobby of creating multiple identities to wander the martial world. One of these identities was Yue Yang. This alter ego was born because from a young age, she had been pursued by countless men with ill intentions. This led to her developing a trauma, believing that all men only cared about appearances. Thus, she created the infamous bet as a test. Qiu Su was certain that if he showed true sincerity, she wouldn't be able to deny him. What she truly sought was someone who could genuinely see beyond appearances. Yue Yang had a special technique in her eyes that allowed her to detect lies. Even though she knew Qiu Su's words were true, she struggled to believe them. Until now, every man she encountered desired her solely for her beauty. She never imagined her heart would waver for the strange boy standing before her. Qiu Su then stepped forward, confident he had passed the test. He reminded her that passing the test meant she had to grant him a wish. She blushed furiously, nervous about this bold boy getting closer with that problem of his still unresolved. He was brave, and she couldn't believe he genuinely found her scarred face beautiful. Qiu Su, undeterred, repeated that since he passed the test, she must fulfill his wish. Her face turned even redder, imagining the kind of request he might make. He leaned in and whispered something in her ear that we, unfortunately, don't get to hear yet. She paused, seemingly pondering his words before snapping in anger, calling him a bastard. In the next chapter, it's revealed what he wished for. He had whispered that his wish was, indeed, what everyone might have imagined. On a night where the moon shone brightly, he wanted to share a bed with her and explore the mysteries of yin and yang. Or at least that's what he truly wanted, but he couldn't. Confused, she asked what he meant by couldn't. Qiu Su explained that as a disciple of the Orthodox sect, he couldn't prioritize carnal desires. Therefore, his true wish was for her to return the challenge letter to the Black Dragon and ensure the duel proceeded fairly. She, who had imagined all sorts of requests, was infuriated by this anticlimactic wish. She screamed, calling him a bastard, and in her rage, accidentally unleashed her internal energy. The force broke his sword, sent him flying, and slammed him into a tree. The roar of the tiger's blade echoed, a sound he never expected to face. Kyosu, battered and confused, wondered what he had done to deserve this. Seeing him crumpled on the ground, she approached, apologizing for unintentionally using her martial power. Kyosu, now vomiting blood, realized she had momentarily dropped her disguise and used the abilities of a true martial artist. From her reaction, he was certain she hadn't meant to harm him. Not missing the chance, he played innocent and asked how she could treat a junior this way. He lamented that she seemed so merciless to those who recognized her beauty. When she admitted it was a mistake, he asked if she would still grant his wish. Flustered, she agreed. Kyosu beamed, triumphant that his strategy had worked. She placed some pills on the ground for his recovery and started to leave. Watching her go, Kyosu couldn't help but feel he'd come out of this with a profit. As she climbed a tree, he heard someone shouting his name. He quickly picked up the items, deciding to keep the encounter a secret from Jin Hui and the master. Meanwhile, Jin Hui was racing through the forest, worried about the energy disturbance that shook the entire mountain. She feared something terrible might have happened to her junior. Finding him on the ground, she cradled him in her arms, asking if he was okay. He groggily replied that he had been attacked by a group of masked individuals. Although the battle was brief, he managed to defend the sect. Jin Hui cursed the Shadow Society, vowing never to forgive them for what they had done to him. Kyosu thrilled, thought to himself that all the pieces were now in place. With Jin Hui's rage now fueled, he was certain his senior would give everything in the upcoming duel. Jin Hui continued to hold him, assuring him that he would give his best to protect him. Night fell, and a new day began. After a night of rest and some of the pills, Kyosu had recovered significantly. Yun Zhong and Jin Hui asked how he was feeling. Feigning weakness, he claimed that after circulating his energy, he was starting to feel much better. The master, noticing his enthusiasm, asked what he'd like to eat as he still needed more nutrients. This piqued Kyosu's interest as they seemed to only eat plants in the sect. Jin Hui leaned closer, saying she'd fetch whatever he wanted. Kyosu mentioned he'd love some braised pork belly. Though he also craved oysters, he knew they were far too expensive. Standing up, he told Jin Hui not to worry. She'd managed to get it. Now dashing through the forest, Jin Hui blamed herself for everything. She resolved to be more helpful and to ensure she could protect her junior in the future. The problem is that every time Jin Hui gets too close, her heart races. She feels as if she's being drawn to embrace her role as a woman, which leaves her flustered. That's why, every time she sees him, she tries to run away. However, it was this very weakness that led to him getting hurt. She knew she needed to be more resolute and live solely as a martial artist, nothing more. She had to strengthen her heart to help the people of the sect. Sitting at the table, Wang Wang had already heard everything that happened. Feeling a bit embarrassed, Jin Hui shyly asked if she could request some pork. He smiled and reassured her, saying not to worry. After all, Kyosu got hurt because of them. Of course, they wouldn't be ungrateful, and with that, she expressed her gratitude. Suddenly, Heron slammed the table and called out to her. Heron asked if everything was okay and if she was looking after Oso. Confused, Jin Hui questioned the sudden offer. Why was the little girl trying so hard all of a sudden? Heron replied that it was obvious. It was because Kyosu had saved the inn that day. And that's why he at least deserves a like on this video that helps Mamoru make more juicy content for his viewers. Activate the cheeky little bell, and I'm out.